Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Asia Business First podcast. I'm Adam Bakhtir, and today my co-host Julie Yu is on assignment, so unfortunately she couldn't be with us. But as always, it's a pleasure to have our Deputy Chief Editor of Digital News, David Bottomley, who's joining us once again. Welcome, David. Thanks for stepping in today.
Good Thank you very much, Adam. And as always, I'm excited to be part of the Asia Business First podcast.
It is emanating from me,
but I think there's a big contrast between my state of affairs and yours, because you look exhausted, borderline hungover, and in desperate need of a coffee.
It's definitely not from being hungover, but you know what? I am quite tired. It's interesting because most people wind down on a Friday, but for me, it's completely different. Friday is my busiest day because the prepping for all the shows, the podcasts, the forward business plannings. I mean, my job is
I'm looking for my little tiny violin.
Never done. Where is it?
Oh, come bring it up. I sympathize.
But you know, the fact is that I've been up since 4 a.m., as you know, prepping for all the shows, and you know, probably has something to do with the eye bags under my, you know,
the bags
under my eyes. They are huge. The one thing that keeps me going is, of course, coffee. But you know, David, at 4 a.m., nothing is open. After work, every single day, it's religious for me. I go straight to my favorite coffee place and I grab my cup of joe. But you know what? I do feel a little bit guilty about it, not because I'm having the coffee, but most of the times I'm not bringing my own cup. You know, I'm using the disposable cups. I'm not being green. I'm not being environmentally friendly. And we know that the styrofoam ones, you know, are terrible, aren't they? And even the paper ones are hard to recycle because they've got the plastic lining to keep them waterproof.
A daily cup of coffee in a takeaway cup means you are effectively destroying the planet, and therefore you should be guilty. But there are companies which are trying
to do... Guilty as charged.
Yeah. There are companies which are trying to do something about it. Starbucks among them. In less than 2 weeks' time, a little later on this month, Starbucks outlets in the UK, they're going to be charging customers 5 pence, just under 10 Singapore cents, for every disposable coffee cup that they use, trying to encourage people to bring in their own mugs and containers. Well, and that's not all.
I actually think that that price should be raised. I mean, I personally use the disposable cups, but I mean, I would be happy to pay a little bit more just to encourage or to force myself from bringing in my own. But indeed, they also announced they're going to be eliminating plastic straws, which is a great idea, from its outlets by 2020. And considering that Starbucks is one of the world's largest food and beverage companies, these moves are going to make a huge impact, because it's estimated that Starbucks' decision will remove 1 billion straws from circulation annually. That's a staggering amount. So in the future, all those cold drinks will be served in a cup with a raised sort of plastic lid. But why not do away with the plastic lids as well? Starbucks spokesperson was unable to join us for the podcast today to comment on this.
I think plastic lids are apparently easier to recycle than straws. And the problem with plastic straws is that they're very narrow and tend to fall through the cracks in the conveyor belts at recycling facilities. And also because they're very light, they just get blown away and they just form part of the daily rubbish which accumulates here, there and everywhere. The heart of the whole discussion is whether these plastic straw bans are actually going to do anything meaningful, or perhaps whether companies could do a bit more than that.
And also, I wonder if these green campaigns by companies are more of a marketing gimmick than a real effort to save the earth. Well, we've got a lot of people to weigh in on that actual topic. We've got Lars Fudish, who's a principal consultant and managing director of Precious Communications. Welcome, Lars. Florence Tay, co-founder of Unpacked, which is Singapore's first zero-waste grocery stores. Welcome. Mitchell Liao, corporate affairs director at Asia Pacific Brewery Singapore, which has been engaged in sustainable practices since 2010. Welcome, Mitchell. And last but not least, Tay Sok Leng, who's the head of business strategy and development with the Singapore Environmental Council, a non-governmental organization which influences thinking on sustainability issues and coordinates environmental efforts in Singapore. Welcome to all of you. Great to have you on a very interesting topic today. Sok Leng, I'm going to start with you. How do you motivate businesses to become sustainable, and how would you rate the progress of companies here in Singapore with their efforts to go green?
Thank you, Adam. So when we talk about sustainable, it is actually more than just being eco-friendly. It actually extends to beyond the operations which businesses operate, and also how employees react as well. Now, when companies are recognized to be sustainable, it actually gives a good brand name to these companies, and it actually benefits the businesses as well. And also, if you think about it from an employee perspective, it also helps to attract employees to join these companies.
Yep. How would you rate the progress of Singapore corporations going green?
I think in terms of the awareness, if you look at what's been happening in the local scene, lots of things are happening. So certainly, I think the awareness are rising. And also, a lot of businesses are actually jumping onto the bandwagon as well.
But there, of course, there's always potentially a cost in going green. It's not just simply a case of coming up with some sustainable initiatives. There need to perhaps be changes in workflows and work processes and products. So how receptive are businesses when they suddenly have to start thinking about the costs involved in being more sustainable?
So if you relate this to, in terms of the brand name that these sustainable practices do for the companies, whatever is the cost, the long-term benefits that it does for the businesses does outweigh that as well.
How do we know that? What are the long-term benefits and what's the proof of the pudding in that scenario?
Yeah. So a case in point here is that if the consumer knows that the company is actually producing products that are certified, that is eco-environment friendly, and we also have seen from a 2015 Nielsen study where millennials, the Gen Z, are actually willing to pay more for these products, it certainly does bode well for these companies.
Well, I'm Gen X, but I'm willing to pay a little bit more. But let's get the corporate perspective from Mitchell. Mitchell, you know, I understand Asia-Pacific Breweries take sustainability very seriously. Tell us about your efforts or the company's efforts in order to reach those objectives. And is it about the corporate image or is it about the bottom line? Or is it about both?
Sure. Thanks, Adam. I think for us, sustainability has been really part of the operations since many years ago. So more than 10 years ago, we started on this journey. And prior to that, as part of our operations across the region, when we set up plants or our breweries in these markets, we have also put that issue upfront, right? And we think about, look, we are a beer company. It's made of 95% water. And it takes probably about 3 to 6 liters to make a liter of beer. So we do know that we have a huge water footprint. And in those cases, we actually take steps to invest into plants, equipment that are actually more water efficient, and also in terms of outputs, right, that we have on-site waste treatment plants. And then we can use some of this water back in terms of a non-potable use, which means they are not used to brew the beer, but general cleaning. So that's where I think definitely there is a cost involved. And at a point in time, I think we haven't linked that to the corporate image. You know, we did what was right in our view from the business perspective, because we are going to the communities, we are extracting resources from those communities, and it's only right for us. And that kind of philosophy has stayed with the business throughout these many years.
Let me dive in there. You said that the APB sustainability journey really started getting going a decade ago.
Yes.
And what was the key motivation at that point? Was it because senior management said, look, we've got to do our part to save the planet? Or did the company recognize that there was a growing awareness of green issues, and therefore you wanted to position the company to tap into that customer interest? What was the thought process a decade ago?
I think a decade ago, it was probably the former. I don't think we realized that, oh, look, you know, this would become a kind of a sexy topic as we see today, where every company is trying to get onto the bandwagon. So it was really a consideration, like I mentioned, right, that we as a business felt that, look, if we are going to invest in the market, in the country that we operate in, it is only right that we take care of the resources. And that was driven by those considerations upfront 10 years ago. Fast forward to today, yes, now we recognize that, hey, look, you know, we have been doing right, you know, so many years ago, and how can we do more? And we have been in Singapore for more than 87 years, right? And for us, sustainability means that we want to continue to operate in Singapore for another 86 years. Well, and what do we need to do today?
That's from the perspective of a much older company. Let's get one from a much younger company in sort of the new economy with Florence from Unpacked. I mean, what motivates, you know, your corporate ethos to be sustainably driven?
Well, for both me and my co-founder, we were just trying to be practical, where I felt that paying for packaging is unpractical because we throw it away and we don't consume. And for him, because he stays alone, so he can't finish his food and he throw away the unconsumed portion. So both of us thought that this business model is actually practical for both of us. Hence, right, we started this zero-waste grocery store.
But you were speaking to, of course, your customer base as well. I mean, when you look at your customer base, are we talking about the Gen Zs that are very concerned about the sustainability of the environment as well?
Yeah. So actually, we have different kinds of customers. There are customers who are concerned about environment, reducing packaging waste. We also have consumers who are also looking to reduce food waste.
Lars, are you buying, you know what the corporates are having to say here?
Yes and no. I mean, there's nothing wrong with wanting to do the right thing. And earlier you asked about what's the long-term benefit of having a green agenda. Long-term benefit is saving the earth that we're all living on, right? So it's, I think it's just everybody more or less has ambition to do the right thing. Some are just more active than others. And what's the journey? For everybody, it's a journey. Nobody can fix their whole footprint overnight. So with Starbucks starting with the straws, yes. But if you want to look at it holistically, what are the vans using on fuel that bring those recyclable straws to the shops, right? Does it actually cost more because they have a different supplier in the eco footprint? So a lot of the things are small things that might look good on the surface, but I think to really look at it from an economic point of view or ecological point of view, what's the overall footprint that we're producing? And some companies have a holistic view, like what Mitchell said about, we're starting with the water. 95% of what we produce have water, so let's start with the biggest impact. Not necessarily the last straw of your reputation.
Lars, let me pick you up on one of the comments you made just there, which is that we all have the ambition to do the right thing to save the planet. Now, that might be true on an individual basis, but I wonder whether that's true on a corporate basis, because for most businesses, the overriding issue which they are looking at is their bottom line. And if the cost is too great to do what is right to help save the planet, then surely they're not going to do it.
I have to disagree with you on that. I think I will just give examples on our bottles. We serve beer in the bottles. For us, we kind of have a returnable system, and we have about 86% of a returnable rate. And that figure is about 16,000 tons every single year that we've saved because of our use of this returnable system. And if you look at the Singapore statistics on the glass recycling, what we are doing is actually more than what the entire country is currently recycling today. And so I think for us, that comes with a cost. Right, it's far cheaper to use what we call a one-way bottle, which means we pack the beer into the bottles, we stand in the market, and we leave it to the waste collectors to collect it and send it to the landfills. Right, and it's much cheaper for us to do it. Right, for us to put in that system, it's going to cost us. Right, in terms of manpower, logistics, and of course, when the bottles come back, we have to wash it, and we have to incur costs. So we did our own simple math. It's far cheaper for us to use one way. Right. And then society will have to bear the issue of us putting all those bottles in the market.
So you're making an investment, but at the same time, the costs involved come with some clear branding and marketing benefits that in doing that, in absorbing that cost, you are able to project the company as being something that cares about the environment. And therefore, perhaps you are using that cost as a marketing investment. Is that kind of oversimplifying it?
I would say that when we made the decision to do that returnable system, it wasn't driven by marketing. Because I said the intention was really about us doing our part and to provide that leadership within a society to say, look, as a business that you want to operate in the market, you need to be mindful of sustainability. And that's where I think was our starting point.
And I think it doesn't hurt if your reputation improves by doing the right thing. Yeah. I think the easiest way is if doing the right thing saves you money and saves the environment. Like if you look at logistics companies, DHL, UPS, they're constantly doing fleet optimization. That means their cars have to drive less, burn less fuel, and the goods get faster to the customer. Everybody benefits. That's a simple part, right? But the other part is also there are companies out there that really try to do just greenwashing. Or let's do an initiative under our CSR so we look good. But actually the footprint of what they're doing overall just increases on impact. So it's really a two-edged sword on looking into what companies do on initiatives and what's the real impact. So you could argue with Starbucks, the straw is great, but isn't the bigger issue what do we do with actually the coffee cups that are coated with and waxed and can't be recycled in most parts of Asia? That's a big issue that nobody addresses, right? So it really, it's a journey. What can we do now? And does the company have an ambition to move beyond that? And if everybody believes that they're on that journey, I think people are patient. It's just, is it a one-off feel-good mechanism? I think companies are getting called out.
Right. And do you think, Sokling, I'm going to ask you this first, that, you know, for companies to march down the CSR path, that this is something that is the onus lays completely on them, or that, you know, the regulations, the government policies need to also champion that and support that and encourage private enterprise from doing so?
I think when it comes to sustainability, I think it really requires a 360 approach. So everybody has a part to play. So from the ground itself, the consumers need to be educated. So I guess if you look at what's happening now, there's been a lot of education, a lot of awareness being built in. People are aware that there is a need for recycling and perhaps also going down to the path of reducing and having responsible consumption. And I think when there's enough movements on the ground where people feel the need to do so, businesses are likely to respond. And therefore, then when you have the consumers, the businesses' response, and you have the regulations that's in place, for example, the recently announced packaging legislation, then that helps to create a closed-loop solution to that.
Can I ask you then, on the domestic front, it appears that recycling rates in Singapore have actually been going down despite the national efforts to encourage people to recycle more. So what is your assessment of the recycling culture here? If you're saying that the public and private sector are doing their part to encourage it.
I think to a point made earlier on, I think if you talk about sustainability, if you talk about recycling, it's really a journey. If we look at what is it right now, the awareness is growing. So it's a continuous effort. And I think it starts from the individual. If all of us here feel that we have a part to play, it will certainly help to influence the people around you and therefore the businesses as well.
Florence, how receptive are people in Singapore to the idea of doing things completely differently when it comes to shopping? I mean, your business has got a very unique proposition, and I would imagine that there is a fundamental barrier in terms of trying to persuade people who are used to a conventional shopping experience to come to a business like yours.
Yes, because our concept is kind of new in Singapore. So initially, we have a few curious consumers who come and shop. So we'll share with them like some of the benefits of zero-waste shopping, which is first is you cultivate the skills of mindfulness. You have to plan your shopping list in advance. And then being able to buy the amount you need is already an upfront cost savings. And of course, in doing so, you actually access fresher, better quality food. And you can even access organic food.
But don't you risk sort of alienating the customers that perhaps aren't forward planners like myself? You know, sometimes they say, okay, well, I know I'm going to eat today, so I'm going to bring my own containers.
Yeah, so we actually stand by a few donated reusable containers that are free for shoppers to pick up if, like, let's say they have insufficient containers or probably not the right type or right size containers. Okay. And in that way, you actually slowly, you are actually cultivating back the skill of mindfulness, and you actually don't shop on impulse because you don't get drawn by all the marketing gimmicks of buy two, get one free, and then you feel that, okay, maybe I need that extra packet because it's free, but actually you don't really need when you settle down and think of it. So actually, I have shoppers who feedback when they come to the station and say that, actually, I save a lot of shopping at Unpack. Because my weekly grocery bills usually tend to be like $100 over, but now it's being cut to like $50 or even lesser.
At the same time, if you look at it from a brand perspective, for the customer, it's also about the convenience.
Yeah.
Am I used to a certain shopping experience? Does it make me to put in extra effort? I think that's the big thing where customers, where do we pick them up? We can't have them to do two steps at a time, one step and then the next step, right? And it's an education journey. Mm-hmm. How can we make it as easy and convenient for customers to do the right thing more easily? One interesting thing is just from home. My kids call me out because they're getting school education. Papa, plastic is bad. Don't bring plastic bags. That actually works in an overall branding and marketing campaign from the government. Start with the young ones because they will push the next generation to do that change because they're educated on what's the right thing.
It is an education journey. I think that's a very valid point. But my cynicism just kind of makes me very suspicious of some of the corporate activities which are being undertaken in the name of sustainability. And I wonder whether it is more to do with marketing and branding. So, for example, the Starbucks initiative to ban plastic straws, that's something. It contributes to ecological thought patterns. But when all is said and done, straws are an infinitesimally small part of plastic waste. So Starbucks can do this, it gets lots of really good headlines saying, well done, Starbucks, saving the planet. But actually, it's not going to make that much difference in the grand scheme of things. And if a company like Starbucks really wanted to do a lot more to save the planet, then perhaps they could look at banning the disposable cups or all its plastic waste. Is that even realistic, I wonder?
It's, again, down to the convenience. What are we used to in our consumer behavior? Right? If they would start from one day to the other, you have to bring your own cup, business would crash and all the other shops that would still provide the cups would flourish, right? So how can we incentivize step by step? Because the problem is behavior change on the individual level. You, me, and I'm sure we, after this podcast, we are banned from Starbucks. So find another place.
Well, they didn't turn up. So.
How is it easy for us to make that change?
So it's unrealistic to expect any business to really go for the big bang approach when it comes to sustainability, because if they do go for that big bang approach, the risk is that they will alienate their customers because they won't be used to consuming in a certain way.
But there are examples where it works. Look at Tesla. Tesla said, we're completely only doing electric cars without an infrastructure in place. So how can you do that? First of all, you go for premium customers that can rely on building their own infrastructure, and then you build the infrastructure to support the system. That actually works. It's just a very bold move that only a few people would be willing to do.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mitchell, I want to get your perspective on this too, because I mean, if you think about it, right, whether the objective there is to sort of build your brand awareness and displaying APB as, you know, an environmentally friendly company versus saving costs. I mean, at the end of the day, are we at the tipping point where businesses have to display green credentials in order to sway customers? In the case of APB, is there any difference? I mean, are people going to be swayed more because you recycle your bottles and you're also cognizant of the precious natural resource in Singapore, water, of course, being used to make beer?
Again, it is a journey. I think we started from the sustainability point of view. And of course, I think, you know, you have a lot of surveys and you have a lot of anecdotal evidence to suggest that, look, the millennials are willing to pay more. Have we seen it in the market with our brands? Not really. I think, again, it depends on the product. We haven't seen the brands that are trying to differentiate themselves through their credentials. We have tried to do it because we have solar panels on our rooftop, right? And 20% of our energy comes from these solar panels. So with that, we are saving about 20% of our carbon emissions. And that is actually more than enough for us to brew Tiger Beer based on this green energy. And then we have started on how are we able to link what we are doing to the brand. And I think the perspective was that we want to educate consumers at a point in time, right? Because we have not seen consumers saying or demanding that, look, you as a brand, please, I want to know how your beer is being brewed, where your ingredients are coming from, right? But we have increasingly seen those coming in. And so that's where we started to say, look, all right, let's use the brand to reach out to consumers. And that's where I think, again, the change in terms of their thinking, the convenience on how they consume the products, I think that needs to be done. And to the earlier point on, you know, your comment about, you know, are these initiatives greenwashing? I think my view is that we look at the track record of the company. You look at them consistently over time. What are they doing? Are they fundamentally changing their practices? Are they looking across the value chain? And where can they make the greatest impact? And of course, from the business point of view, you also have to understand that it is not that easy to change, especially if you are looking at the supply chain. It is complex. It is huge. Right? To make a simple change requires a lot of time and planning. Again, it depends on the company's will and approach to say, look, what can I really do to move the needle?
Sokleng, you've already touched on this a little bit at the beginning of this conversation, but what are the best ways of trying to convince businesses to adopt a more sustainable outlook? Is it appealing to their green nature that they should want to do something good to save the planet? Mm. Is it because it's good business decisions or good business practices? What is the overriding message which you find resonates with businesses in your conversations?
I think if you look at what APB has done, you see, when they first started with the bottles and it moved on to solar panels, so like what we've some of us had said earlier on, it is really about a journey. And it's, if you think about sustainability, it is not just about the product itself. It is also about the way people operate, the way people live, dine, shop, and all those. So if it gets into kind of like people's mindset in terms of how they lead, how do they operate in the offices and bring back these practices back home, that's how you can actually create that demand and therefore the supply as well. Getting people to recognize, to create the demand for this kind of products and this kind of services. Mm. And businesses will just naturally, because of market forces, react to that as well. But it is a journey. It takes time.
Florence, I want to get your perspective on this. So how elastic or inelastic is pricing to consumers, let's say, versus for your company, Unpacked, where you encourage customers to bring their own containers to purchase something, say, versus a competitor that is, you know, doesn't require one to do so? I mean, are you noticing a difference with pricing, and does it impact your customers at all?
It varies, though. We have some customers who are still very price sensitive, so we have to do a bit of community educations in our store, explaining to them, like, you know, the first thing is actually you are saving on food wastage and also plastic packaging. And we also encourage our shoppers, especially on weekends, we actually see a lot of families bringing their kids on board, so to school, and then we start sharing with the younger ones. And we also encourage the parents to let their kids have the hands-on scooping, hoping to inculcate the habit and sharing with the kids information. So we have parents who also share with the kids, you know. So you see this, when you bring your own container and scoop, you actually save a lot of packaging and food waste, etc. So this is good habits that we think is good to cultivate from young. So it's a habit, it's not a lifestyle choice.
Obviously, you're in business to make money, I presume, that you're not doing it for philanthropic reasons. So I'm curious, what was the process you went through which made you decide that Singapore was in the right place to sustain this kind of business? What was the thought process whereby you thought, yep, we're going to go for it, let's set up Unpacked?
Like I shared earlier, we were thinking more for practical reasons. There are people who can't consume finish their food. There are people who are like me who don't pay for packaging. And of course, in Singapore, we have the choice of our wet markets where we have the local provision stores where you are actually able to buy the food amount that you need. But we were thinking more of like organic food so you can eat healthier at the same time without all the packaging waste, because all the organic food in Singapore is currently all packaged.
But was the decision to set up the business based on some instinct, some awareness of a growing desire to be sustainable and green? Or did you actually do some research? Was the decision based on actual evidence or just a gut feeling that the time was right?
It was just on gut feeling and practicality reason. Because I'm a very practical person, and I thought that, you know, it's so much more practical to buy food produce without packaging.
So presumably, though, that is something which a small business can do, is try things out based on instinct. But big businesses aren't going to have the luxury of just kind of having a shot in the dark and hoping for the best.
I think business like Unpacked, by not having the need to provide containers, that's actually, if you look at it, compared to the competitors, it's a cost saving, right? Mm-hmm. They can, then how they can they channel that cost saving? And for us, I think corporates, it can save the company money, right? Yeah. For example, if you look at our packaging, so we just did a very simple change, right? We just reduced the weight of our can lids by just a mere 0.1 gram. And that saves us like, what, almost 20,000 tons a year in aluminium. And that is huge. I mean, the monetary savings may not be that huge, but in terms of the packaging waste, so again, if you map back to the amount of resources required to make those aluminium, we have essentially avoided that amount.
I'm going to challenge David's cynicism here. So does it matter whether, well, I mean, it does matter, because ultimately companies should want to effort to strive to protect and save the environment, right, for sustainability reasons. But does it matter if it's because of that? Is it because of building your brand image? Or is it because, oh, I'm going to save a buck? I mean, you know, as long as the end goal is met, is that all right?
Ideally, it's not a contradiction, right? Mm-hmm. So what Mitchell just said, if it saves me as a company money, everybody benefits. The environment, the company, the customer. I don't even need to publicize it. The interesting thing is, when does it become desirable, more desirable to do the right thing? That's always the tipping point, right? Tesla did it as an example. Suddenly, if you drive a Tesla, you make a statement. If you drive a Prius, you make a statement. And that statement as a brand reflects back to you as a personal brand, or that person does the right thing. We have that in our own office with the containers. People bring their containers to Maxwell Hawker Center, come back to make a statement for themselves, feel good about it, do the right thing, feel good, look good. It's really about where's the tipping point from creating awareness for it, informing people and educating them, to creating desire to do action. Typical marketing pipeline.
Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there.
This conversation could, you know, go on for another hour or so.
Thank you to all our guests: Lars Ferdish, principal consultant and managing director of Precious Communications; Florence Tay, co-founder of Zero Waste Grocery Store Unpacked; Mitchell Liao, corporate affairs director at Asia Pacific Breweries Singapore; and Tay Sok Leng, head of business strategy and development with the Singapore Environment Council. Now, Adam, before we go, let me ask you: are you ever going to use a disposable coffee cup again?
I am never going to use a disposable coffee cup. Nice. Now that I've learned that, you know, they're not even disposable, because, I mean, honestly, they've got the plastic lining inside because they need to be waterproof. So I'm an absolute convert, and it was a fascinating conversation. And of course, it means a lot. But thank you, everybody, for coming in today. In fact, right after this, I'm going to run out and get my coffee. Probably today's will have to be that disposable cup. But I promise, tomorrow. Tomorrow it will change. And for comprehensive coverage of business and political news, please catch Julie and myself on Asia Business First every Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. Singapore, Hong Kong time. And we also are available on video on demand and our channelnewsasia.com website. Join us again next week. Have a great weekend.